Do you love watching sports? Well, how would you like to be able to take your favorite sports with you and watch them anywhere? In your house, on your computer, even on your smartphone for one low price. With National Programming Service, you can. That's right, for one low price, so low we can't publish it, you can take your favorite sports anywhere, anytime with you. And we even give you free installation and free premium movie channels. Don't wait. Call National Programming Service right now. You could be up and running and watching your favorite sports and shows in just a few hours. Remember, call in the next 10 minutes and ask about our special radio offer and learn about free installation. Call right now.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the multi-million dollar sports byline studios in San Francisco for a special edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. This hour, it's all about the Goldfather, the retired, of course, late Jim Goldfather. I'm talking about Emmanuel Stewart, of course, passed away in 2012. My partner, my mentor, what can I say? We traveled all around the world together. I stayed in his house. A lot of guys stayed in his house. His house was like almost like a hotel or a flop house for boxers and people in boxing, no doubt about that, as we cruise through Motown. So we'll talk about Emmanuel. Bring in Richard Sloan at about 40 minutes past hour. He's a former Kronk Gym executive, and of course he was one of the guys with Emmanuel in the end. So, you know, Emmanuel sort of declined at the end. Of course, the cancer took hold, and he wasn't telling anybody. He definitely didn't tell me. I asked him, hey, are you feeling okay? This and that. Oh, I feel fine. Of course, and he was upping his schedule. He was traveling all over the world. He was doing stuff that was like inhumane. I mean, at one point he was in Kiev. He was in Kiev one night, and like within 24 hours later, he was working a fight at the L.A. Forum. And am I telling you that? Another 24 hours back in London working a fight. So he's moving all around the country. This was at 68 years old, of course, and he would die a few months later in October 2012, of course, at colon cancer, stomach cancer. Bottom line is the big C got the Goldfather, Emmanuel Stewart. So we'll talk about Manny in depth this hour. It's all about Emmanuel Stewart here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. This is the Sunday edition, live 11 a.m. Pacific time, of course, for 2 hours, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio, 2 to 11. This is the Emmanuel Stewart, the Goldfather special from the Sports Byline Studios.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent, sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Isaac, you missed the winning dunk and cost your team the championship. What are your thoughts?
Well, I switched to Boost Mobile and got a super fast network and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A20 phones. So even when we lose, I still win.
It was an easy, fast break and no one was near you.
You know what's fast? Boost Mobile's super fast network.
They're calling your shot the greatest miss in history.
Boost Mobile's prices are never a miss. I even get 4 lines for $25 per line per month.
Oh, look at that. The fans are burning your jersey.
Yep, the fans get it. My Boost Mobile network is en fuego.
Switch to Boost Mobile and get four lines for $25 per line per month with unlimited data and four free Samsung Galaxy A20 phones, all on our super reliable, super fast network. Step up with Boost Mobile. New customers only. Limited time offer while supplies last. Requires one port from eligible carrier and activation. One free device per line. Customers who use more than 35 gigabytes of data during a billing cycle will be deprioritized during times of network congestion. Offers and coverage not available everywhere. See BoostMobile.com or retailer for full details.
At 28, I had struggled with opiate and meth addiction for 12 years. I did and said things that the sober me never would have done. One day I realized I was not invincible. I was not exempt. And that's when a friend told me about Elite Rehab Placement. They gave me the tools I needed to get sober, and all it took was the one phone call.
Elite Rehab can help you start to break your addiction problem and get sober in as little as 7 days. And we'll work with your insurance provider to help cover the costs. Plus, we have travel assistance programs to get you here by plane or train. Make this free call right now to learn more.
800-403-5912. 800-403-5912. 800-403-5912. That's 800-403-5912.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-754-4531. 800-754-4531. That's 800-754-4531.
How fitting we bring in the Motown sound. Of course, Murray Wells and the sound of Motown. You beat me to the punch. Bottom line is, I'm not beating you to the punch. You are with the punch. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, the special Emmanuel Stewart edition coming to you. I wish we were coming to you from Detroit. It's so cool to broadcast from Detroit. I mean, whether you're at the Motown studios doing tapings, this kind of stuff. It was just fun to be in Detroit. No doubt about that. Emmanuel never made it to the Motown Museum. And we talked about going off, and he dropped me off there a couple times on Grandview Boulevard. He goes, "You really want to go out and hang out there?" I said, "There's the guy next door in the funeral parlor. He's an old jazz guy. He's wonderful to talk to. He's a great guy to talk to." So I go there and spend a couple hours talking to this guy, this funeral director. Good times in Detroit. No doubt about that. So Emmanuel Stewart, of course, he, as I said, 1963 amateur champion as far as the entire United States was concerned, the United States Golden Glove champion. We'll talk about that in depth in just a minute. But his first world champion was Jimmy Paul, and that was a bit of an upset. We'll talk about that in the show, of course, how he won with Jimmy Paul and how he lost with Jimmy Paul. But here's part one of Emmanuel Stewart.
I started boxing when I was 7 years old, and I got a pair of boxing gloves for a Christmas gift. Even though I had a lot of other toys and train sets and other things, I was just totally fascinated by this game of jumping around, hitting someone, making them miss you, hit them, let them miss you. And there was no really boxing on TV or no particular person or no parent that was involved with me. I was just totally fascinated, I guess, naturally by boxing. And I started having boxing matches when I was 8 years old. And did very well as a little peewee boxer. I had about 15 fights, probably. Never lost any of them. This was in West Virginia. And when I came to Detroit with my parents, divorced when I was 11, I didn't go to a boxing club or anything, so I started getting into street fights. And by the time I was 14, I was in serious trouble with the police for street fighting. Not gang fighting, but street fighting. It's a little different. And they were going to put me away permanently. And as a result, they struck a deal when my mother told her that I used to box when I was younger in West Virginia. So they said, if you go to a recreation center and in 6 months' time we see that you're still there and you don't get in any trouble, we'll try to suspend from sending you away to a juvenile. And so I went to the recreation center and won the city junior championship. Then I won it the next year, then I won it the next year, then I never had the time to even get in any street fights anymore. And the next thing I know, 4 years later when I was 18, I was a National Golden Gloves champion of the United States. And instead of being on the front page or the crime page in Detroit, I was being feeded and treated royally when I came home with the first Golden Gloves champion in 24 years and all of that. So I feel that boxing, amateur boxing, really is crucial in changing my life. I graduated from high school, an honor student, and all because of boxing. And you're getting this whole history of my how I got into where I am, which I've never really taken the time to go into this before. After winning the National Golden Glove Tournament of Champion in 1963, I was going to turn professional because I couldn't go any further as an amateur boxer. And I couldn't find what I call good management for professional boxing. And the only really good offer I got was a group of guys who wanted me to move to California. They offered me a tremendous amount of money at that time, which was $100,000. It's a lot of money, but I would have to relocate and leave my mother and two younger sisters who I primarily would support. So I chose to stay in Detroit, and as a result, I became an electrician for Detroit Edison and was doing very well. And then I had a younger half-brother who moved in to live with me, and he was 14 years old, and he said he wanted to start boxing. So by taking him to the closest recreation center after I got off of my job at Edison, which was a place called Kronk, and this was in 1969, so accidentally I went there just to take my brother 3 days a week to work him out, and he won the Golden Gloves Championship. The next year I had 7 kids I put in, and they all won the Golden Gloves Championship, and the story went all over the country. Young coach in Detroit only produces champions. I was 26, and that's when the Kronk legacy began. And even though I had about 3 years I was totally out of boxing, didn't even miss it after I'd gotten married, and next thing I know I'm back in it, and figuring I would just be in it for a few years, hopefully the baby to develop somebody to win the golden medal in the Olympics. And here I am about 35 or 40 years later, still in it. But it was all accidentally. I never planned to be a trainer. There was never any coach or trainer that I really learned from or emulated. I just did everything naturally. Boxing came easy to me. I have great instincts for it. It's a gift. I went to the boxing gym when I was in trouble as a teenager, mainly because of the fact that that's what I had to do to keep from going to juvenile. And after being there, I got where I developed a world and a community of my own with the fellow boxers and the other. Even I was the youngest boxer there. Most of the one was always like 17, 18, and grown men. I was the youngest kid there. But it became like a world for me, and the going to the tournaments, winning the championships, and it totally occupied all of my time. It kept me out of trouble. And I guess the adolescent years are really the dangerous years for kids growing up. By the time that I was 19, 18 years old, I didn't have any desire to do anything that was illegal. That I went to the gym as an outlet and more of a recreation type situation. There was never no parental influence. There was no money motivation at all. It got to be a part of my life. Unlike many guys who have been successful, even not so successful, they get into the professional boxing, they kind of look, it's like looking down the fact that going back and being involved with amateur boxing. They feel they're beyond that. And even though I've had success beyond any professional training in the history of boxing in terms of my accomplishments and championships, and I still love the amateur boxing. That's where my heart is. If it's up to me, that's where I would spend all of my time, because in going back to the amateur boxing, I have a chance to not only see myself, I have a chance to keep contact with reality. You see so many of the poor kids that are there, they are training that recreation center is their center of the universe for some of them. The situation at home is pretty bad sometimes for different reasons. Maybe it's financial, maybe it's even violence. And so those kids come there and they're beating those bags and looking at a way of maybe getting out of poverty. Many of the kids are, will ask me for 50 cents. Can I get 50 cents? You know, and the 50 cent is to actually buy potato chips or something, because that is the only food that they'll have. And so one day I may be doing HBO broadcasts and I'm living in the big hotels in New York and Las Vegas, big suites, limousines picking me up, and being involved with so many multi-million dollar situations and people. And then when I get back to the gym that next day and take off those tuxedos, it keeps me connected with reality, that everybody isn't living the big life. And then I go right down to that little basement down at Kronk, and that's where I'm the happiest, because I see all of the little kids, a lot of the kids people who are older in life who have fell through the cracks, so to say, of our life, and they're less fortunate, and they're there. They're just happy to see me, and I go in and we talk and we hug, and we start getting ready for one of the amateur tournaments. And I love being in the tournaments when you see one kid fighting, and then the next night you know he's going to be fighting another kid that just won. And I've learned to really be friends with all of the kids. I go to the tournaments, whether they're my fighters from my club or whatever, you know, I take pictures with them and have a lot of fun with them. And that's the type of relationship that eventually ended up with me having a lot of the top professional fighters, such as Evander Holyfield, who in the amateur days, his main nemesis was the crunk fighter, a kid named Ricky Womack. But I was always very good with Evander. In fact, I would wrap his hands when his coach wasn't there, and he was fighting my own fighter, but I would try to help him every day after my fighter had finished training, never knowing that those type of relationships ended up with all of the fighters, a lot of them coming to me professionally. But I think amateur boxing is so important because it reaches kids that the other sports can't attract. A lot of kids cannot afford hockey equipment. But the basketball, I think, and the boxing gets the poorest kids. And some kids, such as myself, I never liked team sports, even though my real gift, believe it or not, was basketball and baseball. I was averaging 33 points when I was 13 years old, and they didn't have three-pointers then, and the team score was only like 51. I was a great shooter at basketball, but even though I was in, I still was more fascinated by the boxing. I just loved that one-on-one competition without having a team, and winning and getting the trophies. That the trophy was my trophy, not had to share as part of a team. And if someone on the team messed up, that could destroy everything in a team sport. But, I mean, you're the whole team, win or lose, in boxing.
Some of the world champions the Godfather worked with, of course, Wilfred Benitez late in his career, Julio Cesar Chavez late in his career, Miguel Cotto, Oscar De La Hoya, of course, brought Oscar to the top there. Or back to the top, bottom line is he worked with Tyson Fury, Yuri Gamboa, Thomas the Hitman Hearns, of course, the most notable of all his champions, I think, in the early days of Kronk, when Tommy knocked out Pepino Cuevas in the blink of an eye, of course, and came back a few years later and knocked out Roberto Duran, or unprepared Roberto Duran, in two rounds. Thomas the Hitman Hearns was the stuff. He talked about Evander Holyfield. There was Hilmer Kenty. He was one of his early champions, of course. And then there was Jimmy Paul. Jimmy Paul's story, what can I say about the Jimmy Paul story? He bet $600,000 against Jimmy Paul, and Jimmy Paul lost to Greg Haugen that night. Bottom line is, the man, he wasn't the greatest gambler in the world. You are tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
If you or a loved one is suffering from a physical or emotional condition that has left you unable to work, then listen carefully. Take this number down. 800-593-7491. That's 800-593-7491. When you call, you'll speak with a Social Security disability expert and get a free evaluation to see if you may qualify for disability insurance benefits from the U.S. government. That's right, a monthly cash payment paid directly to you from the Social Security Administration. Whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied disability benefits, call now. The disability attorneys at Pinnacle Disability can help you build your case, file an appeal, and represent you at no upfront cost to you. Don't wait another minute to see if you may qualify for your Social Security disability benefits. Call Pinnacle Disability Group at 800-593-7491 for your free case evaluation. That's 800-593-7491. 800-593-7491. Call now.
It has been said that everyone has a book in them, but do you have the time or the ability to write your book? Maybe you picked up some skills or had a life experience that you want to pass on in the form of a book to help others. Maybe you want to leave an autobiography for your family. Or maybe you've built a successful business and you want to share your story. At Dorrance Publishing Company, we have professional writers who can help turn your book idea into a finished manuscript quickly and affordably. A Dorrance ghostwriter can provide as much or as little help as you need to complete your book. You'll work directly with your ghostwriter to finish your book faster than you ever could on your own. It's easy to become a published author. Call Dorrance now to learn more.
800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. Call right now. That number is 800-485-6003.
Hey, travelers. Do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call. Because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1780. 855-325-1780. That's 855-325-1780.
Some more Motown sounds from Grandview Boulevard in Detroit, Michigan. Of course, Emmanuel Stewart, that's where he's based, man. The Kronk Gym was all about Detroit, Motown. At the end of the day, maybe he was the greatest trainer of all time. Back to born and bred, Emmanuel Stewart.
When I think of amateur boxing, I think of the beginnings, little boy, a little girl nowadays, that goes to a gym and is just jumping around, wanting to learn how to throw a punch, maybe to try to win a little trophy, to do something that maybe they, especially for little kids who are physically small and would not be able to necessarily grow and compete in basketball and football. And the other sports that require someone to be big. Amateur boxing means different things to different people. Some kids get into amateur boxing because of the fact that they can participate in something, being physically small, that they couldn't compete on a major level because with other sports because they're physically small. Many kids get into amateur boxing because of parents. The parents, especially a lot of the fathers who have liked boxing or was boxers, they actually start automatically teaching the kids how to box when they're like 5 or 6 years old, so the kid don't have a choice. And you look at many of the kids, Oscar De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Floyd Mayweather, Roy Jones Jr., those kids got into boxing because they didn't have a choice. Their parents started them to box. And in the case of the Mexican kids and a lot of Hispanic kids, they actually get in it for the fact that they are physically small, a lot of them. They can get in a sport where they can compete on an equal level where, you know, being so small, they couldn't effectively play baseball, maybe or football or basketball. And in a lot of the cases, they look at it as a way out of poverty for a lot of the kids, particularly Hispanic kids, especially after the unbelievable great success of Oscar De La Hoya, who was a kid, even though he was from a middle-income family, to see him making all these mega millions of dollars, it's been a great inspiration for so many of the Mexican and Hispanic kids. And I think more than any one particular person, I think Oscar De La Hoya should be given credit for the really tremendous influence and influx of kids from Mexican heritage and Puerto Ricans even getting into amateur boxing now. I see a lot of the influence and power in amateur boxing today is as a result of fathers. Everyone is particularly viewing the success of all these recent multi-million dollar fighters, such as the Roy Joneses and Oscar De La Hoyas, Shane Mosleys, and the Floyd Mayweather Juniors, because of the success of these kids who were almost forced into boxing by their fathers. You see a lot of fathers in the gym now, more than ever, even in my gym, back at the Kronk Gym, where there used to be just the boxers coming in, the kids coming in on their own. I'd say about probably 60% of the kids who are boxing in my gym in the amateur program are accompanied by their parents today, whether it's fathers or mothers, which is amazing. Parents support kids in all sports, not just boxing. It's unusual. Boxing is the last sport that has got the parental involvement. You know, the parents have come to the kids' baseball games, the football games, the hockey, but never have they came to boxing training sessions the way that they are doing now. And I think that's because of the unbelievable success of so many boxers now who are associated very closely to the parents, and in many cases the parents have become very financially secure as a result of the success of these kids from their boxing, such as the Roy Joneses and the Oscar De La Hoyas and the Shane Mosley. So the parents are looking at it not as just a way of supporting their kids, but if the kids can make it, it's a good chance that they can benefit them also. I don't think that boxing attracts any one particular type of kid. I mean, I've got a lot of the kids who are from wealthy families. I've just had three national champions, all from one family, which is very unusual. And they've all been boxing less than a year. It's two of my twins, Joseph and Jacob Bonas. These are Romanian kids whose dad brought them there because they were rough kids, even though they come from a upper middle income family. And then the older brother, who's 14 years old, and the two twins are just 12, he came even though he was an honor student. So he just came down with his two little brothers. And in less than 1 year's time, they all have won national championships. And in fact, I don't think all three of them are undefeated still in almost 20 fights. And then by the same token, I have a lot of the poor inner city kids who really have to sometimes catch two or three buses to get to the gym and scraping up money. And they still are competing, and they're living on the same level in their training camps and traveling. So boxing attracts people from all different walks of life. And some kids come to boxing, they just plain like boxing. A lot of the success stories we have, such as the Klitschko brothers, Vladimir and Vitaly Klitschko, these are guys who come from a fairly wealthy family. Their father was a big officer in the Russian army. He's a pilot. The mother is a school teacher. But still, they loved sports. They loved to contact one-on-one sports. And as a result of that, the two Klitschko brothers have both became heavyweight champions of the world. When I see a kid come into boxing right off the street, the first thing I do is to teach him his balance and spend time with him and try to make him feel important. And a lot of times, maybe if he comes for about a week or two and he sees he's serious, I like to bring him little T-shirts and stuff with his name on it. And a lot of kids just feel that they're part of a team or something. They take a lot of pride. And when we send some of the boxers to like a little amateur team tournament, if I have the resources, I like to try to send some of the beginning kids with them so they can realize that by boxing there they get a chance to travel, which means a lot to particularly some of the poor kids who never get to travel anywhere. And just spend maybe a week up there in a tournament just watching all these guys, seeing what can happen, seeing these guys get the medals around their neck, seeing the different tournament activities. So I try to always spend time with the kids traveling. I think that's traveling is very important for kids. And a lot of kids who went on to be my world champions, Milton McCroy and Thomas Hearns, they said the reason they liked the boxing when they was 12 and 13 as compared to the baseball teams that they played on when they was kids, because in the boxing they got to travel more. So just because of being on the boxing team, they got to travel and go all around the country. They would love to box, so they quit the other sports. Boxers are different today than they were, like everything else is to some degree. The kids are wanting to be more into business now, which is good and bad. And that's why you don't have any boxer, I say, dominating and having these great undefeated records anymore, because they are more into becoming the promoters and sponsorships, and instead of having certain people to take care of those areas and for them to focus strictly on boxing. The great boxers who had the tremendous reigns where they was dominant, such as the Ali's and the marvelous Marvin Hagler's and Ray Leonard, those guys, they had people who took care of their business and they was focusing on being boxers. But today, nearly every boxer, after he wears a title, he wants to be the promoter, he wants to do this. And so it's a difference. The styles in the rings have changed. It's more showmanship. They're coming in more worried about the music that they're going to come in the ring on is sometimes more important than even the preparation, the training. I mean, these guys cannot even come out of the dressing room if they don't have that right music on now. It's changed more. It's more show business, but it's like so many other things. Boxing has changed a lot in terms of the ethnic background of the people who are participating now on a major level. You have a tremendous more influence of Hispanic kids, because the entire country, for the most part, is a big influx of the Hispanic population is growing so much. So that's only normal. And then you had the phenomenal success of Oscar De La Hoya, which has surpassed almost all boxers in the history of the sport in terms of economic profit and the popularity. So that's been a major factor also, particularly with the Mexican community. And just in general, boxing has turned around and changed the same as a lot of the other sports have. So I don't see where it's any different in the other sport.
The Gold Father, the great Emanuel Stewart, of course, talking in 2006 about boxing in general. Speaking of amateur boxing, you've got to give back. I spent some time with the kids in an amateur tournament this past weekend, and it was unbelievable. It just was. I mean, I'm watching kids at 10, 11, 12 years old, and I was boxing at 10 and 11, okay, but you know, not like this. These guys are like, they would light me up talent-wise, combination-wise. These kids are throwing 4, 5, 6 punch combinations and just absolutely blowing my mind. I was absolutely enthralled by the talent that was shown, of course, at the Peninsula Boxing Pandemonium No. 3, of course, put on by Nick Bellafato. Of course, you can check that out online. You are tuned to the Mighty Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We continue with our tribute to the Gold Father, Emanuel Stewart, 1944. 2012 with the Motown tribute. Of course, straight up, we'll bring in Richard Sloan, and we'll hear from a man who discussed the rise and fall of Prince Nassim Ahmed. Remember him? Yeah, that and more on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
She said, "Love don't come easy. It's a game of give and take. Can't hurry love. No, you just have to wait. You gotta trust, give it time. No matter how long it takes, but how many hard."
Now, let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Here's a great way to save money on your prescription medications. If you take Viagra or Cialis, we can give you a way to pay as little as $2 a pill. Compare that to prices as high as $60 per tablet. These pills work for men and women to improve their sexual performance. And now for the price of 2 or 3 pills, you can get nearly 100. There's no need to pay expensive prices for Viagra or Cialis. Call now with your prescription and pay as little as $2 a pill. We offer 24/7 service and always free delivery and confidential packaging. Change your life for the better and have fun. Call Pharmacy Shop 24/7 to get generic versions of Viagra or Cialis for as little as $2 a pill, plus free discreet shipping.
800-709-4409. 800-709-4409. 800-709-4409. That's 800-709-4409.
I'm going to tell you how you can get real healthcare for as little as $6 a day. Yes, now you can get affordable healthcare for you and your family immediately and save as much as 50% off your current monthly healthcare payments. Our plans are perfect for people that are self-employed, can't afford health benefits where they work, or just want to pay less for their current healthcare. And coverage is guaranteed regardless of your medical condition. We even offer some of the new Christian faith-based health benefits. Save up to 50% on your family's health care. Make a free quick call now. There are no contracts, and we give you a 10-day money-back trial period. Call Provision Enrollment right now for your risk-free guaranteed health insurance quote starting at $6 a day.
800-472-5145. 800-472-5145. That's 800-472-5145.
iHeartRadio, an app so powerful, it holds 20 million songs from 450,000 artists. thousands of the best live radio stations, custom stations, and stations created just for you. It's anywhere and it's everywhere. Millions of songs, thousands of stations, one free app. iHeartRadio is that easy. Download the app today or listen online at iHeartRadio.com.
Some of the guys who man the train, of course, Michael Moore, Double M, WBO light heavyweight champion, going on to be the heavyweight title holder after he left Emmanuel. Of course, Gerald McCullough, that tragic thing that took place, of course, in 1995 in London, the UK, in that fight with Nigel Benn. Emmanuel wasn't part of that. There was a contractual dispute, and Gerald McCullough and Emmanuel weren't working together at that time. But had Emmanuel been there, and we talked about this many, many times, that fight wouldn't have lasted past the first round because Nigel Benn was knocked into the fourth row, and for some reason they let like 35 or 40 seconds elapse before he was able to get back in the ring. Once you're knocked out of the ring, the fight is over. Bottom line was, at the end of the day, you know, Emmanuel was one of these guys who was brought in to tune people up or to reform them or try to bring them back to the top, okay? He was working with Prince Nassim Ahmed when the Prince was undefeated. The bottom line is, Prince just didn't listen.
Nassim Ahmed had a kind of free spirit style in the ring, and to some degree, very colorful and arrogant, but not so bad outside as people would think. In a lot of the ways when I was with him, he was very focused still as a boxer. And what happened in the case with Nas, he had so much talent that in preparation for the Barrera fight, he just took Barrera lightly. And if Nas had trained with the same focus and the intensity he had early in his career, I believe he would have beat Barrera. I think his punching power, his elusiveness, instincts was just too much. But it was just a case of someone not being prepared for a fight mentally.
And Barrera now is 10 seconds away from victory, surely. Left hook from Barrera, onto Ahmed's chin once again. Ahmed's on his toes, and a straight left from Barrera. And Barrera celebrates. Ahmed knows he's defeated.
Unfortunate for Nas, he never fought Barrera again. But with Nassim's attitude of being confident and hands down and punching from all angles, I never tried to refine it because it was successful. A perfect example, the last fight that Barrera had, I had did to HBO broadcast on it. And after the fight, my fellow commentator, Larry Merchant, says, Emmanuel, Barrera looked very good. Say, you know, the next fight should be with your boy, you know. I mean, how do you feel? I said, Larry, I was very impressed with him tonight. I said, we have our hands full. So I get back to camp, and I talk to Nas. I say, what did you think of the fight? I found he didn't even watch the fight. And I had instructed HBO to send tapes of the fight. So when I spoke to him about a few days later, he still hadn't saw him, and I asked HBO, I called HBO. I said, didn't you send the tape? He says, yes, we sent it. So I said, where's the tape at? He says, I didn't get any tape. I say, I saw here that they said you received and signed. He went in the bedroom and got it out. I said, why come you guys haven't been looking at this? Because, you know, he was with him like all the time. They were still showing tapes of him being knocked out by Junior Jones, you know, 5 years ago. So this is what this was the problem I had. I said, that's not the same fighter, Nas. They're showing you the worst. I want you to prepare for the best. And this is the way he's looking today, and he didn't want to see it. So that went all the way through the whole camp. But I never, never, never tried to change his style. I just wanted him to have good quality boxing. But Nas just didn't have the proper preparation for the fight. But for his talent and excitement, oh, my God.
Probably coming to camp at 155 pounds and making 126 pounds probably wasn't the smartest idea for Prince Nassim Ahmed either. Of course, here was a guy that was making almost trillions of dollars. I kid you not. He was getting TV rights from Arab countries, multi-million dollars. What he made in the United States was peanuts compared to what he made abroad. The bottom line is he made a whole lot of money, and of course the former WBO 126-pound champion is now 266 pounds. I kid you not. Look at any shots of him online. You'll be absolutely blown away. Blown away by it. Bottom line is, let's bring in a guy that knows a little bit about Kronk. I'm talking about Emmanuel Stewart's right hand for a number of years, Mr. Richard Sloan. Richard, how's life treating you?
Life is treating me very well. Thank you very much, Pedro. Okay. It's a pleasure to hear from you.
Of course, the Gold Father, and I can go on and on, all the different titles, the greatest trainer of all time, maybe, this and that. Give me, you know, you worked hand-in-hand with him, and you can give me a little bit of the bad, but give me the good and the bad and the ugly of Emmanuel Stewart in your mind.
Well, as you said, the Gold Father, the hired gun, you know, he had all these great names, but the guys like you and I think the best name that we could give him is best friend. And he was that way to you, and he was that way to me. And so as far as the good things, definitely his friendship, his trusting ability. Once he really liked you, and coming from a boxing background and coming from the deep south in West Virginia where he was born, he didn't have a trust of a whole lot of people, but once you broke that circle, once you'd earned it, you couldn't ask for a better friend.
You know, I stayed at his house a few times, and he talks about all the people that stayed at his house. It was like a flop house. It was like a hotel.
That's true. He gave everybody a chance. People would come from out of town, and they'd say, well, what's the closest hotel? And Emmanuel would say, well, you know what, just go up the stairs and to the left, and I know you're exhausted, you're jumping that bedroom there. All the fighters that came to town got to stay there. I lived with Emmanuel for 5 or 6 years in one of the rooms there when I was working as vice president of Kronk. And, he was just, he did have a warm heart, but that inner circle, he kept the real inner circle that he would speak his real mind to, he kept very small. And as far as friends and reporters and stuff, he could really count on one hand. And I know he thought the world of you.
You know, the fact that he was connected to everybody in Detroit. I mean, I went to Detroit. I was trying to do a book on Motown, and he hooked me up with a few people, Martha Reeves, and formerly of Martha Reeves and Ron Vandellas. And she absolutely said nothing in actually lunch interview. She was like bland. She wouldn't say anything about Berry Gordy at all. And the other people I just ran into dead ends with. But, you know, he allowed me one night. He said to me, he goes, we'll be working with a special lady tonight. And I said, well, okay. I didn't think nothing of it. You know, especially, I don't know what he's talking about. If he's bringing some chick, I don't know what he's talking about. I have no idea. It was Aretha Franklin.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, they shared a great friendship. And as you know, she sang at his memorial. And they had a great friendship. And she thought the world of him. And Emmanuel used to listen even to her father, C.L. Franklin, who was a Baptist preacher, and he had a lot of tapes and CDs out there. Emmanuel would listen to that, and that was kind of his form of going to church. So he and Aretha really got along very well.
You know, in my last interview with him in 2012, I think it was in July or August of 2012, he passed away a couple of months later, I think in October. He sounded...
October 25th.
Yeah, he sounded old. And what I mean by that is, it wasn't liberal Emmanuel anymore. It was like this almost right-wing Emmanuel. I think he said, the sex and the violence on television and people cutting up bodies and this and that. And he was really sort of Mr. Negative. And I never heard him go negative before, but he knew his time was up. And I don't know. The last few conversations we had, you know, I look back on him now, and I treasure him. I mean, I almost remember every syllable back and forth because it was Emmanuel. But you know, I could see that now, looking back at it, that he was in a declining state. I just didn't realize it.
Well, that's one of the examples of how close you were to him, because he didn't do that to everybody. He kind of, the last couple of weeks, he went into a little bit of a shutdown, and obviously realized that he was mortal and it was coming to an end. And I spoke to him 3 days prior to his death, and again, you know, I said, is there anything I can do, Emmanuel? And he just said, just pray. He said, just pray. He knew the end was near, and I think he cleared the air with everybody he had to, and was surrounded by loved ones. And I agree, his last maybe like the last 2 or 3 months, I think he kind of hid how serious it was from people and kept working and maybe hoping it would go away. But it didn't. And like all of us, you know, he at one point or another, that day is going to come for all of us. And October 25th, 2012, it came to Emmanuel.
Okay, here's a schedule. When in the end, there was August 2012, Ukraine one night.
October.
I'm talking about his schedule in September.
Okay.
All right. He goes. He's in Ukraine. He goes to L.A. the next night. He's working in L.A. at a fight in L.A. the next night. And then he's in London 24 hours later, working a corner in London. And he's dead 2 months later. I mean, he just ran himself to, like, the ever-ready battery as hard as he could to the end.
He really did. He picked up his work ethic, I mean, which was tremendous all along. But that last few months, yeah, he really worked around the clock. At that point, his hair was graying and thinning out. You could see his ailment, and but he just worked. But which is the same when his mom died. He went to work that day. He got a phone call and said, you know, your mother sadly passed away, and he had fighters to train at the gym. And I remember him holding the pads and tears rolling down his face. Emmanuel's way to deal with tragedy was to work. And in his own case, at the end, that's how he dealt with it the last few months. He just ran himself into the ground, working around the clock and staying busy, not dwelling on self pity or anything like that.
You know, I don't use Twitter, and one of the reasons why I don't use Twitter, believe it or not, was Emmanuel tweeted me 3 days before saying basically goodbye. You know what I'm saying? And that just like absolutely blew me away. It absolutely blew me away. In fact, I'm getting teary eyed thinking about it right now. But the bottom line is, there's no.
Well, he would bring.
Go on.
He would bring of all the announcers and anybody. Whenever Emmanuel did something,
Stop it, bro.
He had the power over. You know, the only guy he wanted to call and bring in was you. He didn't care where you were in the world. Whatever Pedro wants, Pedro gets. You know, you make sure he gets a suite. You make sure he gets somebody picking him up at the airport. You make sure he stays at the house. Whatever he wants, he gets. And that was his deal.
You're tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
We are the Debt Destroyer Network. Any debt you have, credit card, tax, student loan debt, call now for free information that helps you destroy your debt. It's great advice. Plus, when you make this free call now, we have debt destroyer experts ready to help. They can show you how to destroy your debt and get your life back on track. Debt problems don't have to be overwhelming. You can live stress-free and debt-free. Credit cards, medical bills, IRS tax problems, even student loan debt. Learn about free programs offered by the credit card companies, hospitals, and even the government that can help slash your debt. Call the Debt Destroyer now for free information. Call now. 877-360-0402. 877-360-0402. 877-360-0402. That's 877-360-0402.
It has been said that everyone has a book in them, but do you have the time or the ability to write your book? Maybe you picked up some skills or had a life experience that you want to pass on in the form of a book to help others. Maybe you want to leave an autobiography for your family, or maybe you've built a successful business and you want to share your story. At Dorrance Publishing Company, we have professional writers who can help turn your book idea into a finished manuscript quickly and affordably. A Dorrance ghostwriter can provide as much or as little help as you need to complete your book. You'll work directly with your ghostwriter to finish your book faster than you ever could on your own. It's easy to become a published author. Call Dorrance now to learn more.
800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. Call right now. That number is 800-485-6003.
I don't even recognize myself anymore.
I'm really worried about him. His addiction. I haven't seen him like this. Ever.
Hey, look, I never wanted to start using. I knew the drill, but I was out of options.
I just want to tell him it's not your fault. There are people out there who can help. People who have felt your pain. They know what you're going through.
This has to stop. I'm losing everything. Everyone.
You've been strong your whole life. You can do this, but you have to reach out for help.
It's time. I can do this.
Addiction is a disease, and diseases need treatment.
Call Quit Drugs 321 now at 800-338-6906, 800-338-6906. That's 800-338-6906. Paid for by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
That's big!
No, we're not going back into the time tunnel. This is not Richard Sloan, the artist that died in 2007, was born in 1935. This is Richard Sloan, my buddy. You realize there was another guy that died in 2007 named Richard Sloan, right? A famous artist?
I do, and he used to paint ducks, which is a long way from the right hands and left hooks I paint. But
okay, bottom line, what are you doing? What are you doing these days in artwork?
I just did the Tyson Fury and Wilder fight. I did the official artwork for that. It was unveiled on Fox TV. It was on a limited edition program and posters and T-shirts and things like that. So staying busy. I have a commission for a big-time fighter. I don't know, you know, that I should say it yet, but I'm working on a commission for another week, exactly. Staying working around the clock, Pedro. Boxing's been good to me. It's the only thing I've ever known. And going back to the Hall of Fame, this year will be my 24th year as the official artist of the Hall of Fame. And that's where I initially met you, when you had fighters.com. We're going back, man. We're going back to your quarter
the
of a
beginning
century.
Of the internet.
You were the first guy out there, man. And I mean, I don't understand why you don't get as much credit for it as you do. All these other sites have popped up, and they were basically rip-offs of you.
Well, you know, me and Al Gore, it was me and Al Gore, we discovered the internet. Bottom line is, listen.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, you know, Emmanuel wasn't an angel, and he wasn't a saint. He was good to us, and yet he had his negative aspects, too, and we're not going to go into that in depth or into detail at all. But at the end of the day, he treated us both, to some extent, when he could, like gold. There were other times when he didn't treat you like gold, but there were contributing factors, this and that. You know what I'm talking about. But at the end of the day, you know, he was the Kronk Jim Goldfather. And whatever you want to say about him, this and that, don't say anything negative, because I will knock you out.
I feel the same way, Pedro. I actually feel the same way. And there was times, but, you know, coming from his background and his lack of formal education and things like that. He wasn't a financial master. He wasn't, he wasn't the kind of guy to put stuff together on a business plan and things like that. He dealt with it Emmanuel's way and sometimes he backfired a little bit and some of us caught a little bit of the shrapnel from that. But like you said, now it's all said and done. We have his back 110%. We know what we had and I'm with you. If somebody says something bad about Emmanuel, they got a problem with me as well.
Well, he'd be proud that you're pound for pound the best artist going as far as the sport of boxing is concerned, doing all these programs, things like that, the World Heavyweight Championship programs, man. You've become the Leroy Neiman of the 21st century.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, and you take good care, Richard. All the best, and God bless, okay?
Pedro, always a pleasure. God bless, my brother. You take care.
I'm trying to hold it together here, folks. Emmanuel Stewart, born July 7th, 1944, in Bottom Creek, West Virginia. Whoa. Died October 25th, 2012, Chicago, Illinois. You have tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a special edition dedicated to the late gold father of the Kronk Gym. If you know anything about boxing, of course, Kronk Gym brought us Tommy Hearns, Milton McCrory, Lennox Lewis. I can go on and on. I mean, he worked with everybody. Aaron Pryor, even trained him Alexis Arguello for a little bit. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, pound for pound, he was my good friend. And may he rest in peace. Emmanuel Stewart, you were a saint. 'Cause I love-